This is a special edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today, we'll talk about the Old Farmer's Almanac.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You know, the Old Farmer's Almanac has been around for centuries now, and it's still being published. Janice Stillman is the current editor. I spoke with her about this winter's weather forecast and asked her a little bit about the history of the almanac.
The almanac was founded back in 1792. And we think back now and we have to remember that back then we had an agrarian society. Everybody lived on a farm, or just about everybody anyway, grew their own food, kept their own animals, or traded goods and services for the same. There were not paved roads. There certainly was no radio. In fact, there were very few newspapers. Most people had reading material that consisted of, say, a Bible and a farmer's almanac. And indeed, there were other farmer's almanacs. We're talking about colonial New England now, and there just wasn't that much available. So Robert B. Thomas was one of those folks, and he grew up on a farm in Western Massachusetts, and he read the farmer's almanacs of his day. And these are pamphlets compared to certainly today's publications. And he found that maybe they weren't accurate, maybe they weren't reliable, maybe they weren't very entertaining. And he also loved astronomy. So he decided that he would, in fact, create a calendar of the heavens, a true almanac, because indeed that is what the word means, we've come to learn. So he studied the skies, and he went to meet and learn from an almanac maker in Boston, and he prepared for the year 1793. And, of course, the astronomical information included the rise and set of the sun and the moon, the length of day. And, of course, he introduced weather forecasts in a very primitive fashion because, again, remember, he had no satellites. He had no technology to speak of, really. I don't know how they made the forecast exactly, but certainly they maybe used some proverbs to introduce some information there. But he printed 3,000 copies of his first edition, the 1793 book, about 46 pages, and he sold out. Now, this was, again, a regional publication. We're talking New England, so maybe distribution through parts of Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, certainly, and maybe a bit in Rhode Island and Connecticut. Anyway, people loved it. They loved the idea that he prepared a publication that was accurate and also useful with a pleasant degree of humor. That was really his mission, and his mantra was just to entertain as well as inform, because, again, people had very few resources. His first edition included things like recipes, a new and improved way to make butter, which was very important to folks at that time, home remedies like how to get rid of freckles and how to cure your animals of certain diseases. He identified things like distance between places, because not only were there no roads, but there were no maps, and people needed to be able to plan how long it was going to take, usually on horseback or by carriage, to get from place to place. He also identified the vacations of the universities, which prominently then were Harvard and Dartmouth, because, of course, many of the students had to leave school or go back home to work the farm, help seed, or even harvest. So they needed to know when the vacation schedules are going to hit, and therefore when they'd be available. So that was the first edition. And as I say, he kept going. He was the editor and passed away when he was 80. The story goes that he was proofing the next edition of the Old Farmer's Almanac. And the folks who were working with him as printer and, co-editors picked up the publication from there and continued it. In fact, they introduced the cover, the art that we see, which is the four seasons of illustrations, the winter, the spring, the summer, and the fall, all suggestive of activities that happened on the farm at that time, as well as the frame, if you will, the emblem on the cover that displays the harvest, the pumpkins, the fruit, the vegetables, the grapes, the leaves. And of course, those folks, after Robert B. Thomas passed, put his photo on the cover, and with Benjamin Franklin, who they did not work together, but Ben Franklin was the father of almanacs because he founded Poor Richard's Almanac. So he is forever emblazoned on our cover. Again, the publication has grown from about 46 pages back in the earliest editions to now well over 200, in fact, 256 pages. That's the traditional edition, or you can get 32 more pages with a reference section. We continue to have the same kind of content or similar things not so much distance between places, but other information, because we do have maps and GPS and other things. For example, the folklore continues, the recipes continue in every issue. Certainly the weather forecast using state-of-the-art information and satellite data, but the same principles, the same disciplines that Robert B. Thomas used, which is solar science, climatology, and meteorology. We continue to have stories about animals in nature and animals in the farm, specifically more in the husbandry nature, that is to say, to raising animals and keeping animals. We have stories about pets, of course, amusements, because back then, just like now, everybody likes a laugh, likes to smile. The calendar pages continue in greater detail, and we hope, frankly, a bit more better accuracy because we have better resources again at hand. So whether it's predicting the eclipses, of which there will be two in 2022, one in May and one in November, or the conjunctions, or the phases of the moon, or the rising and set of the sun, the length of day, all of the information presented in the Old Farmer's Almanac today is really an addition, an expansion, if you will, to everything that Robert B. Thomas founded in his first edition. I should point out, too, astronomy and astrology, they're both in the book. Of course, astronomy is the true study of the sky, and astrology has to do with the zodiac signs, but it's so important to some of the traditional practices that people then and today carried out, such as planting above ground and below ground for the best results, and also best times for doing things, specifically best days, whether it be quitting smoking, weaning a baby or an animal, planting, putting up fences, moving, selling a house, is really several dozen things that people try to do on the best days, which are identified in the Old Farmer's Almanac, because they are the most propitious days. If you can't do it that day, you still may have very good luck, but they're the days that a number of people identify as the best for these certain activities. So, you know, there's so much in the Old Farmer's Almanac. The trends in the front of the book now for several decades, we've been putting in the trends, the kinds of facts and fun and activities that we're seeing across our lifestyle, whether it be on the farm, around the home, with our pets, the culture that we're seeing, for everything from hotels, if I can remember a couple of things, and our hotels supplying waterproof books for reading in the pool, to information like your dungarees, your jeans are going to become home insulation, will be used to insulate homes very soon. We're seeing that pet beds are being disguised as end tables. We're seeing mobile vans complete with all the trappings of the office, including coffee machines, buzzing around the neighborhood for folks who are working from home. These are just a few of the trends that we're seeing and get published in the book every year in the front. That makes the Old Farmer's Almanac a time capsule of the year. So it's so many things to so many people: a calendar of the year, a time capsule of the year, a handy reference book, a cookbook, so many things, and certainly, again, something that's a nice digression from the headlines in the news of the day.
You know, I'm wondering, the Old Farmer's Almanac is always yellow in color. Are there reasons behind the colors?
Well, it is yellow. It has been yellow for actually centuries. I think in the earliest form, it was actually more of a beige because there weren't that many choices. And the cover was, again, in the earliest several decades, back in the 1800s. I think the printers and were allowed to put other colored covers, if you will, on it with the same cover illustration, but they might have been blue, they may have been orange. There's actually a historical society not far from us in Massachusetts, in Worcester, that has the collection, every copy of the Old Farmer's Almanac. Certainly we do here as well, but they may have been, a certain year may have been distributed with several different colored covers, but I think we landed on the yellow because it's really, one, it stands out certainly, but it's also true to the beige and just makes a great background for the illustration that is in fact on the cover.
Can you tell me what the Old Farmer's Almanac is telling us about this winter?
I can. Our forecast is for colder, drier conditions and near normal snowfall. So important to so many folks these days. We're seeing snowy periods around Christmas. January is predicted to be the coldest month of the year at 7 degrees below normal on average for the month at about 20 degrees. There could be lake snow effects, be many frigid days, and just about every week you'll see some flurries and snowy periods. In February, we're looking at temperatures on average at 29 degrees, which is slightly above normal. and very possibly more wet than white. We're predicting slightly more precipitation than snowfall in February. March, when everybody is tired of winter and looking forward to planting season, we're predicting temperatures of 45 degrees on average for the month. That's 7 degrees above normal, so a relatively mild March. Warm conditions, but just watch out right before the vernal equinox. We'll be looking at possible snow flurries in the area, but you know, sometimes that can be a good thing for planting because the late snows usually bode well for moisture in the ground.
Are there different regional almanacs for across the United States when you make the weather forecast?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Our forecasts have been regionalized since the 1980s or so. We have 16 regions of continental U.S. to forecast for, and also Alaska and Hawaii. And, of course, we do a Canadian edition where we do 7 regional forecasts up there as well. But the regions are determined really by the movement, the climatological movement of weather systems. So, for example, the jet stream and generally the fact that the westerly winds prevail across the country. So they consist of all the regions, that is, consist of all or parts of several states typically, with the exception of Region 5, which is mostly Florida. But people might wonder why, you know, they're only part of this state is included in a region and the people, you know, maybe even across the street or in a different region. It's really about the weather of the movement of the jet stream and like that. And we suggest to folks who might live on the border of a weather region to look at the region that's adjacent to them or near them, and they might glean a little bit different forecast, and they might in fact see some of that happen because Mother Nature knows no borders. We can set up the regions as we'd like, but Mother Nature isn't going to obey our lines on paper.
You mentioned lake effect snows, so I know we're in, I believe, the region that I'm in here in Illinois. You also suggested that March, based on the forecast, will be about 7 degrees warmer than normal. You didn't say anything about snowfall and precipitation during that month. Are the expectations for it to be above, below, or about normal for precip?
Precipitation will really be about normal. Slightly below average this month was the forecast. Slightly below in January, say about an inch. And where you folks are in the western portion of the region, which is Region 6, which really hugs the Great Lakes and runs all the way over to western New York up to Syracuse, but you folks are predicted to have above normal precipitation in February, especially 2 inches above normal precipitation, and then in March, just about average, about slightly above by maybe a half inch. So the precipitation will actually be pretty consistent most of the season, except for February when it could be a little above normal.
How are these forecasts developed? There are solar cycles and something from a black box.
Oh, the black box, yes. Down the hall from me in one of the offices of the editor-in-chief, Judson Hale, there is a black box that contains some notes about making forecasts. It's a bit of the lore of the Old Farmer's Almanac and does really speak to the tradition of the disciplines that we do use, which continue to be solar science, climatology, and meteorology. So the disciplines are the same, but the state-of-the-art technology that we use every time is a bit different, which is to say it's the most current technology available. It's available to other people. It's not a secret, but it has to do with how we interpret and apply the information to our forecast on a long-range basis.
How important are the solar cycles to the forecast?
Well, actually, the solar cycles are key. Now, these are magnetic storms on the surface of the sun. Sunspots run in cycles of 11 years on average, so typically the cycle starts low and then rises to a peak of activity. And these are magnetic storms on the surface of the sun. And then towards the end of the cycle, the 11 years, typically the sunspots go quiet. Sometimes cycles in a row go quiet or become very active. So, for example, for the past 100 years, we've been in several very quiet sunspot cycles, not much activity on the surface of the sun. Historically, that has meant cooler than normal temperatures on Earth. We have been seeing some of that, but we also take into consideration the fact that there is so much more greenhouse gas, carbon dioxide, and the like in the atmosphere, and that's influencing the forecasts as well as certainly the right here on Earth. So there are a number of factors in play. And also, of course, we're looking at ocean temperatures and jet stream, land temperatures, and, of course, the conditions around the Arctic.
So at this point, we are at a solar cycle low. So activity on the sun is and has not been very active for some time. Do you expect that to change very soon?
Well, it's expected to soon. The activity on the sun is expected to change sometime soon. I mean, these cycles don't last, you know, generations, but they certainly last conceivably for, you know, a decade or a couple of decades. Some of the lowest conditions were in the 1600s and 1700s when we had the Maunda minimum, it's called, and there was really cold conditions. But they are expecting the cycle to rise up or start rising up again in the late 2020s or the early 2030s. Folks can find this kind of information on a number of websites, not the least of which, of course, is NASA. You can just scout around and look into sunspot cycles, and you'll get a sense of what folks are predicting on the long term.
How factual should people who are reading the Farmer's Almanac take it? I mean, you talked a lot about folklore in some of it, and then other things that are based on astronomy, which clearly probably is very factual, astrology, too, which is a different kind of area. How should people read through the almanac and think about it?
It's an excellent question. Accuracy is paramount here at the Old Farmer's Almanac. We like to say, and in fact often happens, that the weather forecasts are 80% accurate, but everything else in the Old Farmer's Almanac is 100% accurate. You know, you mentioned the folklore. Is it accurate? Who's to say it's not? And it's actually part of the tradition of the Old Farmer's Almanac. Same with the astrology. Who's to say it's not? And indeed, folks have commented over the years that our astrologist, Celeste Longacre, who's been doing this for longer than I've been here, which is now two decades, she's been making our astrological forecast for, as I say, quite some time. And folks are very pleased, especially with her best days and some of the articles that she produces about zodiac profiles. So, you know, certainly the astronomical data we hope is accurate. We have two astronomers who are contribute to that page. The historical data, we may occasionally skip a digit, miss some date. You know, there may be something that's mildly inaccurate in the calendar pages, all those fun facts and data and proverbs and like that that folks so much enjoy reading. But we certainly aim to be 100% accurate from cover to cover with 80% accuracy on the weather forecast. So far, so good. Occasionally we slip. For example, last year our winter weather forecast was about 75% accurate, slightly below the 80% traditional record. But then occasionally we're also a little bit better than 80% too. So it all works out in the wash.
Yeah, and by what form do you measure the accuracy? Is it the U.S. weather data from NOAA that you go back and look at to see how close you were?
Well, our accuracy is measured really in our predictions for above or below normal conditions. So Michael Steinberg, our meteorologist, makes all the calculations on that, and he determines whether or not we indeed were. For example, like you mentioned earlier about the precipitation, will it be above normal or below normal precipitation? And on a month-by-month basis for each region, he makes those calculations based on several cities in each region. So it's a very detailed analysis. And there are folks out there who will occasionally challenge the mathematics, but, you know, he's been doing this, as I say, since 1995, so we trust him and we'll stick with it. We don't believe anybody can be 100% accurate on the weather forecasts, and, you know, we hope that if we certainly predict the trends and give people a good sense of what to expect in general regards heat and precipitation, then you know, they've been happy at least to get a sense of what the long range is going to look like.
Thank you so much for telling me so much about the Old Farmer's Almanac. Oh, one final item. Where do people find it?
You know, the Old Farmer's Almanac is available wherever books and magazines are sold, and so many more places in addition, from your garden stores to your hardware stores to craft stores to, you know, your tractor supply and various big box stores as well. You can also go to almanac.com/store and you can order it, or you can call 1-800-ALMANAC. And you can find all of our calendars there, the country calendar, the weather calendar, the gardening calendar, ever so popular. We've got a new vegetable gardening handbook, by the way, for folks if you're looking for something for the upcoming season. New this spring, come February, we'll have the Old Farmer's Almanac Flower Garden Handbook, new to the set. And we've got another one in the works for a year or so from now. You can also get our Old Farmer's Almanac for kids. We're in the 9th edition. The tiger on the cover is the brand new book, and it's 192 pages full color. Kids can't put it down, and parents can't wait to pick it up. So through everything we do, we subscribe to Robert B. Thomas's mission to be useful with a pleasant degree of humor.
Hey, thank you.
It's been delightful to talk to you, and I hope everybody has a happy new year and everybody gets the weather they want.
Janice Stillman is the editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
U.S. Naval Observatory Master Clock. At the tone, Eastern Standard Time. 11 hours, 12 minutes, 25 seconds. Universal Time.
This is the official voice of time in the United States. It is the U.S. Naval Observatory Master Clock Announcer, a voice many radio and television stations depend upon. Well, the U.S. Naval Observatory's written mission includes determining the positions and motions of the Earth, Sun, Moon, planets, stars, and, well, other celestial objects, providing astronomical data determining precise time, measuring the Earth's rotation, and maintaining the master clock for the United States. The U.S. works off the Gregorian, or Christian, calendar, and our concept of a year, of time, is based on the Earth's motion around the sun. The time from one fixed point, such as the solstice or the equinox, to the next, is called a tropical year. Its length is about 365 days, but varies by a few minutes or hours. Our concept of a month is based on the moon's motion around the Earth, although this connection has been broken in the calendar we now use. The time from one new moon to the next is about 29 and a half days, so the moon cycles and our monthly Christian calendar don't quite coincide. It has years of 365 or 366 days, is divided into 12 months that have no relationship to the motion of the moon, and groups weeks in sets of 7 days. But today, a website called Calendars Through the Ages reports almost everyone takes the precision of our calendars for granted, unaware of the long threads spooling out from our clocks and watches backward in time, running through virtually every major revolution in human science. The thread, it says, runs largely through the West, since this is a source of the world's civic calendar, but also casts lines of varying sizes and thicknesses outward to China, India, Egypt, Arabia, and Mesopotamia. Unwinding backward, it pauses at Clavius and Bacon, at the rush of knowledge coming from Islam in the East during the Middle Ages, at bloody wars fought over dates after Rome's collapse, and at Rome itself, at its height, when Julius Caesar fell in love with Cleopatra, an affair that gave the West its calendar. Many different calendars have been developed over the millennia to help people organize their lives. According to a recent estimate, there are about 40 calendars used in the world today, particularly for determining religious dates. Most modern countries use the Gregorian or Christian calendar for their official activities. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
At the tone, Eastern Standard Time, 11 hours, 13 minutes, 10 seconds.
You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find our daily agricultural programming. You can either just click and play it from the website or scroll down to the bottom, and you'll find some of your favorite podcast applications. Places like Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One, Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast too. Along the way, you'll also check out some of the agricultural information from the ag economist and crop scientist from the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.